From WYPR, I'm Sheila Kast. We're on the record. In Maryland, about 100,000 students, almost one in eight, are in special education classes. Do they all belong there? Longtime public education advocate Kalman Buzzy Hettleman's latest book is Mislabeled as Disabled, The Educational Abuse of Struggling Learners and How We Can Fight It. Hettleman says one reason failing students end up in special ed is that most teachers aren't taught evidence-based methods to help them.
They slow down instruction, they divert attention from the rest of the class, and so the only practical solution, albeit illegal, is to place these children in special education.
Hettleman argues tutoring and phonics instruction could help pupils catch up to their peers. The right to adequate education on the record after the news.
You're listening to On the Record, the podcast, a service of your public radio, 88.1 WYPR. Find more podcasts online at wypr.org. And tell us what you think. Send an email to ontherecord@wypr.org.
Good morning, I'm Sheila Kast. We're on the record. When a student falls behind in math and reading, the reasons can be complicated. Are they distracted by trouble at home? Do they need a tutor or extra time to complete assignments? Or do they have a disability? The clock is ticking. Each day they lose more ground. A new book argues that across the country, millions of students are classified as disabled and placed in special education classes instead of receiving fine-tuned help that would allow them to catch up to their peers. Kalman Buzzy Hettleman is a longtime advocate for students with disabilities. He served two terms on the Baltimore City School Board, chairing its budget committee. He was also State Secretary of Human Resources and Deputy Mayor of Baltimore. Hettleman also serves on the Maryland Commission on Innovation and Excellence in Education, known as the Kerwin Commission. His latest book is Mislabeled as Disabled, The Educational Abuse of Struggling Learners and How We Can Fight It. Buzzy Hettleman, thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
On what do you base your conclusion that a significant number of kids are improperly labeled as disabled?
Because placing students who are struggling learners in special education without them having received adequate reading instruction in general education is a pure violation of the law. Under the law, students are not supposed to be placed in special education unless they've received proper instruction in general education, and these kids do not, those who were mislabeled as disabled. They have garden variety reading problems. They don't receive instruction, and they are, I'm sorry to use the phrase, dumped into special education when they continually fall behind. Many students, by the time they're in the third grade, are already 2 years behind. And so the general education teachers who already have large class sizes can't deal with them. They slow down instruction. They divert attention from the rest of the class. And so the only practical solution, albeit illegal, is to place these children in special education.
I would guess many classroom teachers are saying they do give these kids instruction before they make a decision to propose special ed.
They do give the students some attention and instruction, but it's not nearly enough, or else the students wouldn't be so far behind. Teachers are victimized too. Both in general education, they're asked to absorb these children who are so far behind in reading. And when most kids get in special education, they're already so far behind that it's too little, too late. And so we have the national crisis catastrophe in a population that is largely illiterate. The magnitude of this is astounding. According to the best national tests, 2/3 of all of our students in public schools are below world-class standards in reading proficiency. And so the problem in a sense, those who are mislabeled are the tip of the iceberg. We are not providing students with the appropriate literacy skills at the earliest possible times. And as we know, if a student gets to the third grade without the foundational skills of decoding and fluency and beginning reading comprehension, they never catch up. That is a tragic fact of life in our public schools.
You said the size of this problem is astounding. In Maryland, what proportion of students are in special ed?
In Maryland, about 100,000 students, ballpark, are in special ed. And of those, I would say that at least 60% are mislabeled as disabled. You have to understand that the special education population is really of two varieties. Those who are the public face of special education are those who have usually severe cognitive limitations. Some have Down syndrome, some other intellectual limitations. And those are what we think about and read about. They only make up about 15% of the entire population of special education. The other 85%, believe it or not, are the struggling readers, most of whom don't deserve to be there in the first place.
This is On the Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cast, speaking with Buzzy Hettleman, public education advocate, policy analyst, and author. His latest book is Mislabeled as Disabled, The Educational Abuse of Struggling Learners and How We Can Fight It. That's a strong allegation, abuse. What do you mean?
I'm glad you asked. I was cautious in using it. I was almost uniformly advised not to use it. But I decided to use it because, most of all, it's true. If you look at criminal laws on educational abuse, abuse doesn't require intent. It only requires gross negligence. And it is grossly negligent on the part of our society at large and our schools not to provide the instruction that we know will work to basically greatly reduce, if not alleviate altogether, this problem. We know that there is reading instruction, and as I write about in the book, mainly tutoring, that can enable these kids to learn to read. So when we don't do that, I think it is fair and true to say that this is, in a sense, national educational abuse.
You don't blame teachers. You point the finger at the, quote, educational establishment. Who are you talking about?
I'm talking about schools of education in our colleges. I'm talking about the state and federal education bureaucracies. I'm talking about association of various kinds of educators, from administrators to principals and so forth. They have not spoken out, for complicated reasons, on the depth of this problem, and so they should be first and foremost the advocates, but they haven't done that.
You are a lawyer, and you've represented scores of students for free, pro bono, chiefly in Baltimore City. You share several of their stories in your book. Tell us about one of those students.
Well, I start off with Kenny, and I represent few students who are in high school because it's so difficult to narrow the gap once they've gone that far. But Kenny was referred to me. Kenny was in the 10th grade at a selective admission school in Baltimore. That is to say, you have a certain level of grades to get in. Kenny was like most city teenagers. He loved video games. He had a girlfriend. But as I found out, even to my shock, Kenny was reading at a kindergarten level. At a kindergarten level. Now, maybe that's an extreme, but it's not atypical. He had never been taught to read in kindergarten and first grade. Incidentally, he had a low average IQ, but a low average IQ is good enough to enable a child to achieve reading proficiency if they have the right instruction. So Kenny, in the first and second grade, he didn't get the foundational instruction. So what did they do? They put him in special education, I think, at the first grade, and then they gave him a what is known as a reading accommodation. In the first grade, teachers were enabled, authorized, to read to him. So he got put on crutches, literacy crutches, in the first grade and was never, ever, from then on through the first grade, through the 10th grade, taught to walk without crutches. And there are many ways in which the school systems cover this up. But the painful truth is, there he was in the 10th grade. Every textbook was being read to him. He was given every kind of accommodation and assistance. Many kids in his academic situation would have dropped out. Kenny was determined, and his parents were behind him. He just was passed on from year to year without learning how to read.
And that's not the kind of intervention that you are advocating. I want to ask you more about that later in the show, but let me ask this. For parents who believe their child has a disability of some sort and needs accommodations, they may have fought for years to get special education designation.
Yes, and I think that those parents are predominantly those whose children have severe cognitive limitations or unusually severe difficulties in learning to read. First of all, the sad truth is that particularly in an urban school system like Baltimore's, most parents don't have the wherewithal to even advocate effectively for their children. And so it is easier for parents to recognize a problem when the problem is as severe as it is with students who have severe autism or intellectual limitations. They don't understand that their children are struggling simply because they haven't gotten sufficient instruction. And here's a big part of it. So the question is, well, why don't we give that instruction? Well, we'll put money to one side. But even for the time being, an equally strong reason is because of low expectations. What happens is that when poor and minority kids in particular fall behind early, the school system doesn't attribute it to insufficient instruction. They pin it on what? The family and poverty. There's a widespread misbelief that students from poor and minority families can't learn sufficiently because of their environmental circumstances. It flat out is not true. But somehow or another, even educators as well as the public have internalized this. And so the problem is not as well recognized as it should be.
We need to take a quick pause here in our conversation with Buzzy Hettleman, policy analyst, longtime advocate for students, and author. We're talking about his latest book, Mislabeled as Disabled, The Educational Abuse of Struggling Learners and How We Can Fight It. When we're back, what can parents do to advocate for their children? I'm Sheila Cass. Stay with us.
The This is the On the Record podcast, a service of Your Public Radio, member supported 88.1 WYPR. You can support this podcast and everything you hear from WYPR. Become a member. Come to WYPR.org and click the donate link.
Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. The National Center for Educational Outcomes says the majority of special education students can meet the same standards as other students when they are given instruction that is fine-tuned to their needs. My guest, Buzzy Hedelman, says that means they need better instruction, not to be separated into special education and out of the general classroom. And he's written about this problem in a new book, Mislabeled as Disabled. One solution you describe is a strategy called Response to Intervention, RTI, in which teachers assess students early to identify those who are below grade level and then give them extra assistance. What does that assistance look like?
It mainly looks like tutoring, in which you progressively provide intensive instruction that meets the child's skill deficits. And so the RTI framework usually has three tiers. The first tier is what the whole class gets, and kids get a little extra if they need it. But the reality of classroom life is that if these kids are going to get the substantial assistance that they need when they're really struggling, then they need tier two. Tier two is to be pulled out for 20 to 30 minutes a day in a group of, say, is no more than five students with a teacher who is highly skilled in teaching reading. If the child still doesn't respond, and only a very small percentage should not respond to that, then there is tier three. And tier three is generally thought to be another 30 minutes per day, one-to-one, and perhaps with a different method of teaching reading or reading program.
Why hasn't this approach caught on?
Well, first, yes, it ain't rocket science. I mean, who can be against it? But we know the way some of our national programs work. The first reason is money. It costs money for these tutors, and as we all know, most school systems are stretched financially, and we can come back and talk some about the Kerwin Commission. So that's an issue, and it's tough to get the money. The second issue, as I referred to earlier, is low expectations. Not everybody realizes that these kids can attain. Teachers are notoriously undereducated themselves by schools of education. It's a national problem, and they are not taught to draw on evidence-based instruction, what we know from evidence works or doesn't work. And tutoring, there's as much evidence that supports tutoring as on anything at all in the field of education. And then there is another major reason why this doesn't get the play and attention that it should. And I'll call that a liberal political fratricide, meaning that liberals like myself have not coalesced behind this issue. And I had a recent op-ed in the Sun papers in which I led with the fact that in the presidential debates, Democratic presidential debates, the dog that didn't bark in the debates was the crisis in our public schools. There was reference to busing, there was reference to shooting, but nobody dealt with the basic flaws in the instruction that our kids get. And the main reason for that is what I also call our lingering love affair with localism, meaning that a national education role is politically toxic. We are devoted as a people to state and particularly local control of education, but that is a disaster. Think about this. Have we ever had a problem that basically affected minority and poor people predominantly in this country that didn't require a national solution. Think Social Security, think Medicare, Medicaid, food stamps, occupational safety. Need I mention civil rights? The right to read should be considered a basic civil right. It does not happen because of national inaction and the failure to address this as a national calamity.
What do teachers need to make response to intervention happen?
They need time. They need small pupil-to-teacher ratios, and they need better training. They need to be taught what is the research-based best way to help the students to overcome their early deficits.
That's Buzzy Hettleman, education advocate, policy analyst, and author here on The Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking about the ideas in his latest book, Mislabeled as Disabled. You serve on the Curwen Commission, a group tasked with identifying policies and programs to help improve the quality of Maryland's public schools. Do the commission's recommendations address your issue?
They do. And by and large, the commission's report is one I wholeheartedly support. I admire my colleagues and what went into our report. Where the commission did not go as far as I would have liked was to put, I wanted more money put into these tier two and tier three initiatives. We got some money, and there is a down payment in this year's state budget, which will be helpful. But the commission took the position that if we did all the other things in the commission report, all the good things like more early childhood, better teacher training, higher teacher salaries, a stronger curriculum, career and technology education, that we wouldn't have struggling learners. And I don't think that's realistic. I think we can do all those good things, and there will still be a substantial need for the kind of interventions we've been talking about.
But in terms of costs, it seems to me, as someone who's not expert in this, you're talking about interventions while kids are in the classroom, and that would mean less special ed. Would the costs not balance out?
Yes. In the long run, they would. But there's going to be a long period of transition, and actually that was taken into account in the cost estimates that the commission did. However, keep this in mind. I'm sorry it keeps getting so complicated. All of the struggling learners are not in special education. As one expert said, it's almost a flip of the coin in terms of which struggling readers get into special education and which don't. It has to do with the schools, it has to do with the teachers, it has to do with the parents, but there are many struggling learners who need these interventions who aren't in special education, and so reduction in special education by as much as 60%, say, will not free up enough money to meet the needs of all the struggling learners.
Reporting by the Baltimore Sun found that in the past 5 years, parents of students with disabilities have lost more than 85% of legal battles against Maryland school districts. What can parents do to advocate for their children?
It's very difficult for most parents, unless you're wealthy, to hire a lawyer and get an educational consultant who will help you in fighting the system. What should be done is that the proceedings in special education should be more parent-friendly. What happens in the meetings at which the services for special education students are determined is called an IEP meeting.
Individual education plan.
Right. And what happens is that a parent goes into those meetings, there are reports, there is jargon, there is technicality. Schools are defensive because they know they don't have the resources, and they tailor the services to what they have on hand, not what the kids need. And often, the school staff, they meet beforehand and think through what they want to do. They don't do it maliciously, but they do it to protect the system, because they know in many cases that the services they can provide are not enough.
So what can parents do?
Politically organize nationally and locally. It's a political issue. Are we going to provide this civil right or not? And that's a matter of political organization. And they can also try to get their own local school system to be more transparent about what the needs are and how they're not meeting those needs.
A lot of big ideas in this book. Thank you for sharing it with us.
Thank you very much.
Buzzy Hettleman is author of Mislabeled as Disabled, The Educational Abuse of Struggling Learners and How We Can Fight It. On the Record's director and engineer is Nathan Sterner. Maureen Harvey and Melissa Gear produced the program. John Ahrens wrote and recorded the On the Record theme music. Izzy Hettleman is our intern. I'm Sheila Katz. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to this segment of On the Record with Sheila Cast. You can catch the show on the radio Monday through Friday, 9:30 to 10 a.m. on 88.1 WYPR, your NPR news station. And you can support On the Record and all the other public radio programs that WYPR brings to you. Just click the donate link at the top of WYPR.org. And thanks.